The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
And good evening and welcome to the second half of Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday, May 3rd, 2014. I'm your host, Gary Harding, filling in for Jake Brown tonight. And, of course, the man behind here, the host of North Stars Weekly, as we were joking before the show, Brad Kurtzberg is here joining me tonight as John Panarese is having a well-deserved week off. How you doing, sir?
I am doing well. How are you today?
Again, folks on the webcam can see that beautiful green and gold Minnesota North Stars jersey. Jules Malosh, a former California Golden Seals, of course. Brad, if you don't know, we wrote a great book about the history of the California Golden Seals. And we are in round number two, of course. We know what happened on Monday night as the Islanders' season ended on a very disappointing note. 11 shots on goal, and the people on Facebook and all those other areas of sports social media were really upset with the way things ended. And this hour, we're gonna actually get Daniel Friedman from WFAN, and actually he's already on the line, so we might as well kick it off and start with him. Dan, it's Gary and Brad here. What's going on, dude?
How you doing?
All right. Well, we're what, 4 or 5 days post end of Islander season. Are we feeling any more I guess less sad than we were 5 days ago?
You know, I think it's definitely a tough pill to swallow whenever you get, especially when you got a team that is as talented as they were and didn't accomplish as much as, you know, we think or they think they should have. But you know, certainly with time comes more clarity.
Well, let me get this straight out, you know, right away. I know that unfortunately you don't celebrate Christmas, and I know you wouldn't be getting any Christmas cards from Jack Capuano anyway. Again, let's just put the cards on the table. What would you think is the main thought of what happened in Game 7 and how this team could only muster 11 shots on goal?
I mean, I guess the first thing I would think of is inexperience. You know, maybe it sounds cliche, but you do have a very young team, and a Game 7 type situation is not something that they're used to. You know, could be guys were just very nervous, squeezing their sticks a little too much. You know, you saw late in that, you know, I think for a lot of that game, the Islanders kind of had this mindset that they were playing not to lose, and you could tell just by some of the plays they made, they were a little too conservative. They spent a lot of time in their own zone, kind of that defensive mode, which, you know, is important. You got to think defense first, but, you know, you can't forget about offense either. And I think they just were so worried about not losing that they forgot to try and win. And, you know, I think when the Capitals finally scored, it kind of woke them up and they said, oh, no, you know, we better push back a little bit. And you can't do that. You can't wait till late in the Game 7 to show up and do that. And, you know, they've learned an invaluable lesson, unfortunately.
I think part of that had to do with the fact that they were down three defensemen. And I think, you know, in essence, they were trying to stay in the game as long as they could and get that bounce or that break that would have maybe put them up 1-0 and then take it from there. But I think had they been more healthy on the blue line, I think the strategy might have been a little bit different.
Yeah, I think so. You know, certainly it plays in, but, you know, at the same time, you know, Game 6 also, they were shorthanded on the blue line, and you know, the approach didn't change. You know, I thought that they looked very confident in game. You know, the team that showed up for Game 6 and the team that showed up to Game 7, you know, they were almost like two different hockey teams. Although, you know, if you look at the lineups that were put out, they were virtually identical. So, you know, I think it definitely plays in a little bit. You know, certainly guys know they've got to step up, and maybe you worry a little more because you don't have guys who are a little more responsible, have a little more veteran savvy in the lineup, but. You know, at the end of the day, I think you do have guys on the team that are capable of performing who just didn't step up when they needed to.
Speaking of that, looking into those, you know, the Game 6 and Game 7 decisions where Scott Mayfield and Matt Donovan were brought into play, you can't say enough for the effort that those two guys had. I mean, we all know the story of Matt Donovan, and, you know, I've been talking about it all year, and again, being friends with his mom, and I really thought that she was going to come from Oklahoma with her skeet, national championship skeet gun and start shooting some people. But, you know, I mean, kudos to him to have to endure the season that he had and to have to sit here all season long and play only 10 games. I think it was 10 or 12 games in a regular season to be thrust into a Game 6 situation as a do or die And to me, both guys did not embarrass themselves one iota in those two games, especially Scott Mayfield. He turned out to be an absolute monster at times.
Yeah, I would say not only did they not embarrass themselves, I thought they played very well, you know, not just given the situations they were stepping into. You know, it's a lot to ask from any young kid, and I thought, you know, to put Griffin Reinhardt in, you know, they kind of were deciding between Reinhardt and Pulak at the beginning, although I really thought there was no doubt where Capuano was going to go. You know, after that first press conference, he kind of said, yeah, you know, we're looking for some size on the blue line, and you think size, you think Griffin Reinhardt right away. But to put either Reinhardt or Pulak right into that situation is just almost suicide. You know, these kids have hardly even touched the NHL before. At least Scott Mayfield has some NHL experience. Matt Donovan has a season under his belt, and, you know, even though he didn't play much this year, he played a lot last year. So I thought both guys played very well down the stretch. And, yeah, like you mentioned, Scott Mayfield, I think, you know, he looked like a natural. This is a guy who I've liked since his first rookie camp. I've liked him for
Absolutely.
A while. So, you know, it was nice to see him kind of step in and, you know, not do anything too crazy, you know, all around, but, you know, he definitely was a physical presence. He stepped up. He wasn't afraid of anybody, and he looked very calm, and I really liked that about him. And certainly Donovan moved the puck very well as well. So it was very nice to see both of them step up.
I think they both did a very good job. I think another area of concern, though, and I think it cost the Islanders over the course of the series, was a lack of size, especially in the second and third lines. What do you think about that?
You know, maybe it plays in a little bit. I think really, you know, for the Islanders, though, they did go up against a Washington team that was very physical. But you look at this Islander lineup, and you know, there are plenty of guys on the team that can be physical. You know, certainly, you know, the fourth line speaks for itself, but you've got Kyle Oposo is a big guy. You know, he's a big frame in front. Anders Lee, you know, while he's playing, he's a big guy. Brock Nelson has some size. You know, I don't think the Islanders lack size, really, to be honest. I think it's a little overplayed. Maybe on defense, you know, they're a little more on the smaller side. But among their forwards, for sure, there's no shortage of toughness or size, you know, among that forward group. I think that, you know, right there, they're just fine. You know, I would say, though, you know, for me, one of the turning points of that series was when the Capitals put Tom Wilson in the lineup. I think it very much changed the dynamic of that series. You saw a guy come in the lineup. It was almost like a Darcy Tucker, you know, just taking runs at guys. And, you know, it just changed the complexion. He got under the Islander skin. And I think, unfortunately, they spent a lot of that series from that point on trying to get back at Tom Wilson and the Capitals. And they did it about, you know, beating him on the scoreboard and eliminating them. And I think, you know, the Capitals at a certain point really agitated the Islanders, and they just didn't know how to put that aside and say, all right, well, it's okay because we'll beat them on the scoreboard. And no, I think from that perspective, you know, they did have the tough guys, you know, maybe everyone was a little too focused on that. But on defense, you'd like to see them get a little bit bigger, perhaps.
Exactly, and that goal brings back to the thought of the inexperience of a lot of these younger guys. So now that the season is over, obviously the exit interviews are done. Some of the guys are at the World Championships. Just put yourself in Mr. GM's shoes. What do you think would be his first order of business? Obviously, we know they're not going to have a first-round pick in the draft, but what would be his first order of business come July 1? What do you think, you looking at the roster that they got now and the guys that could be leaving the team as well as could be projected to come back, who you think it should be their first order of business to go after?
Well, I would say it's a tie between two things of utmost importance. I think the first thing is you've got to either get Michael Neuwirth re-signed, or you've got to make sure you have a backup who can push Halak, not to the point where he's going to challenge him for the starting role, but that you know that he can come in and give Halak the rest when he needs it, because until Neuwirth showed up, they didn't really have that in Chad Johnson, and I think you saw over the course of time Jack Capuano, and rightly so, I think lost a lot of confidence in Chad Johnson, didn't play him a lot, and you know, the way Chad Johnson played it, I don't blame him, you know, but you know, on the flip side, that has a negative impact, because now you've got to run Halak out there every night, and you risk wearing him out. So I think to get Neuwirth re-signed or someone of his caliber would be a very good idea, and I would say that a veteran scoring winger, either for the first or second line, you don't want to go out and get someone showing his prime, because you do have you've got Michael Dalcole, you've got Josh Hosang, they're going to be here in a couple of years. So you don't want a guy who's going to block them either, but you want a stopgap veteran guy, maybe a Justin Williams-type player, you know, with that age and that caliber, who can step in and provide some additional scoring and maybe some veteran know-how in those situations where maybe the Islanders lacked it in the playoffs this year.
And the only question I was actually, and you brought up the Neuwirth situation, and I've been following this kid, Stephon Williams, who's been playing. He just signed a pro contract at the end of the year playing for Minnesota State and did an outstanding job. I mean, unbelievable numbers. I think his save percentage is up like in the 936 range or something like that. Record number of wins for Minnesota State. Of course, they lost on a, if you've watched the game, an unbelievably controversial goal against RIT. But would you consider making Neuwirth like a one-year deal just to be like that, again, is that stopgap until this kid you say is ready, you know, ready for the big time to be the backup for the future?
Sure, absolutely. The only question is, you know, is Michael Neuwirth going to take a one-year deal? I don't know if he can perhaps do better on the open market. You know, you may have to go two. You may have to go three. Yeah, and the thing with younger goalies also is you really, you know, as much as you'd like to say, oh, they'll be here in a year, you know, I think goal plunders more than any other position, they're just impossible to gauge. You know, like we all thought Kevin Poulin was the goalie of the future. I still think he's got a future in this league if he figures it out. But, you know, we have no clue how long it's going to take him to figure it out. I mean, look at Devin Dubnyk. You know, Devin Dubnyk's sitting out of nowhere. Now all of a sudden he's a Vezina caliber goalie. You know, took him a while. You know, the goalies are impossible to read. So I think I think for the Islanders, you know, to gain, you know, if you've got a sure thing in Neuwirth and you want to lock him down for a couple more years, then, you know, that may not be a bad idea because for all you know, your next goalie in line may not be prepared to be in line, to be next in line. So You want that extra security blanket and you know what Neuwirth brings, you know, or someone of his caliber. So I think, you know, if you can get him in there, you know, and it takes more than a year, I don't think that's the worst thing for the Islanders.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think if you're looking at Williams, you're looking at least 1 year in the AHL, maybe two, in order to adjust to the pro game and learn. You know, there's a big difference between playing every Friday, Saturday in college and then going, you know, three, four nights a week with all the travel that's involved, even in the AHL, let alone the National Hockey League. So there's a big adjustment there. I think, you know, Daniel makes a sound point. They need someone who's ready to step in now. And I think the other issue that you sort of touched on is that Halak has a history of not playing a full season over the course of his NHL career. He missed a few stretches during this season, and this was one of his more healthy seasons over the course of his career. So you need an insurance policy there, someone who can step in, whether it's for three games, five games, or just the odd game to give Halak enough rest so that he's ready for the playoffs. And in the playoffs this year, I have to say he definitely did deliver beyond expectations, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, you know, the funny thing, heading into the playoffs, a lot of people were talking about Yaroslav Halak is almost a concern for the Islanders. I didn't really think of him that way. You know, I thought he would be more of strength, you know, not only because of his history in the playoffs, you know, he's had some very good playoff performances throughout his career, but, you know, this is a good goaltender. And I think sometimes people tend to forget that because he does have this, you know, this knack for giving up just maddeningly soft goals, I think, at times. And, you know, obviously the way he plays the puck is well documented. You know, that collective groan every time he goes at, you know, into the corner to play a puck. But this is a very good goaltender, and he showed it in the playoffs. He stepped up. You know, he's something the Islanders have been missing for a long time. This is the best goaltender they've had since Pietro in his prime. And, you know, I think, you know, to have him for the next several, you know, the next couple of years is going to be a good thing for them. No matter how many soft goals he gives up, he still makes much more big saves. And, you know, he's been there for them when they've needed him. So, you know, he's going to be there for them for a while.
Sorry, Brad right now is currently breaking the studio up. He messed up one microphone before we even got on. He's messing up a second. Brian, I think we have to get this guy out. All right, so let's take a couple of minutes and just look at some of the rest of the stuff. Obviously, you've been watching what's going on at the Garden. I know you were there the other night. What are your thoughts on the first two games at MSG with the Caps and the Rangers?
Well, first game was certainly interesting. I thought the Rangers were kind of stubborn in the sense that the Capitals were really forcing the outside and the offensive zone a lot of the game. And the Rangers are usually this very versatile team. You know, they can play any style you want, but it just seems like they were insistent on making the stretch passes and making their game work, even though the Capitals were clogging those lanes. And, you know, even the goal they scored late in the third period, it was kind of a perimeter shot that just changed direction and beat Holtby. So, you know, I think, you know, it was surprising. And then obviously, like, I was prepared for overtime. And then, you know, the stunner by Joel Ward at the end, you know, I think it was very surprising. That, you know, there was a questionable penalty. You know, it could have been a penalty call. I think it could have gone either way. I think it was a borderline. You know, I don't really have too much of an issue with it not being called. I don't think it was the same as the Ovechkin hit in the Islanders series. But, you know, certainly the Rangers responded very well in game two. you know, that I think that series is going to be neck and neck. You know, the Capitals, I think, are a better team than everyone kind of thought they were. You know, we're all used to the Capitals being this team that chokes, and I think this is a different Capitals team. I think they're much more well-coached. I think they're a little more disciplined. I think they're a little more well-rounded. And, you know, I think you're seeing it. I think you're seeing a team that's really going to give, you know, the Rangers a run for their money. You know, this is the team that everyone kind of has pegged to go to the Stanley Cup Finals out of the East. And, you know, the Capitals are kind of saying not so fast, and rightfully so.
I think it's so key that Alexander Ovechkin has bought into Barry Trotz's system. Trotz is traditionally a defensive coach first. He did not have a lot of offensive talent in Nashville. He was dealing with a limited budget, still got a lot of success out of that team. He comes into Washington. He's got his Ovechkin and his Backstrom and all that. And the fact that those star players have bought into that system, I think, has been a big benefit for the Washington Capitals.
The first thing you see is the plus-minus from minus 35 last year to plus 10 this year. I mean, that speaks volumes for the fact. And you see it all along how Ovechkin backchecks. I mean, I don't think he's backchecked since he was 12.
It's the team as a whole that's bought into it. That's, you know, hit the nail right on the head. I think they play a better defensive game. Even guys, you know, like John Carlson and Mike Green, whose games are pretty much, you know, built on their ability to pinch in the offensive zone and put up those numbers. You know, they're getting back on defense. They're making sure, you know, to lock down the defensive zone. And then they're taking care of business at all ends of the ice. And, you know, that's at both ends of the ice and all zones. So I think, you know, you're seeing that kind of mentality, that mindset that's been instilled by Barry Trotz. And he, like you said, he's got the offensive firepower to play with. It's not like you have to end one or the other. They're a very versatile team.
Now, are you completely surprised? And, of course, obviously it's final that Tampa has destroyed Montreal both games up at the Bell Center. I mean, 6-2 score tonight.
I'm a little surprised because I didn't expect Carey Price to give up that many goals. You know, I thought game one was kind of more or less. And you know, it is only two games of the series, so it's, you know, I don't want to jump to any conclusions and say that the series is over, because it certainly isn't. But, you know, I don't think you expect that for Carey Price too much. And I think if it's the Tampa Bay Lightning, you can't take that for granted and expect that to happen again either. You know, I think you can expect those 2-1. And if the Canadians are going to want to win any games in the series, that's what it's going to have to be. You know, Carey Price is really going to have to close the door. They're going to have to play a better defensive game. You know, Tampa Bay has too much firepower for you to play this wide open fire wagon hockey, you know, goal for goal. You're not going to match them goal for goal, especially Montreal. Their offense isn't that great. They're not that deep. So, you know, you're not going to match. You know, they got Valtteri Filppula, who's almost, you know, had nearly 50 points this year. He's on the third line. You
know, right.
To give an example of how deep they are. So, you know, if you're going to want to do that, Carey Price is going to have to really steal a lot of games. And, you know, I don't expect him to give 6 goals again. But certainly, we know Tampa Bay. If there's a team that can beat Carey Price 6 times, it's the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Well, I know Sergio Mimesso on TSN 690. We were listening on the way to the studio, and he basically came out and said earlier that, you know, three of those four, you know, it was 4-1 at the time. I know he said three of the four goals, he says Carey Price was just basically left to dry. So he doesn't. They really. I know the Montreal media didn't seem to think, especially during the second intermission when I was listening, they really didn't think that Carey Price was the problem. They said, yes, you know, the Montreal Canadiens gave up, you know, less goals than any team in the league. But no, it was Carey Price that gave less goals than everybody in the team. Everybody else on the defense is just, you know, just window dressing, maybe with the exception occasionally of Subban and occasionally Markov. He says, but after you get rid of that 1-2 punch, he says, what do you have? He says, it's all Carey Price that's doing the job. So maybe, you know, this was kind of the wake-up call maybe for Montreal's defense to maybe have to take that big stand up or do something unusual, you know, in games 3 and 4 in Tampa in the next couple of nights.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing about, you know, I don't think it was Carey Price's fault, but, you know, the amazing thing about Carey Price is that even when he's hung out to dry, you know, he rarely gives up 6 goals or, you know, 5 or 6 goals in that situation, you know, just to speak of how great he is. So, mm-hmm. You know, not so much that it's his fault, but, you know, if you're Tampa Bay, you can't expect that that's going to happen again. You know, you have to assume that that was just some cosmic, you know, coincidence,
right.
You know, that happened, and, you know, not say it was his fault at all, but again, I would be surprised if it happened again.
I think one of the reasons that Carey Price is up not just for the Vezina but for the Hart Trophy is because he steals more games for his team than probably any other goalie in the National Hockey League right now. And we're seeing what happens today when he can't steal a game and keep his team in a game. The Canadiens, like you both said, they're not the deepest team in the National Hockey League. The reason that they did so well this year and last year is because they had the goaltending of Carey Price, and if he's not going to deliver, they're not going anywhere.
Right, and listen, you know, every successful team in the playoffs, you know, their goalie is going to steal, more often than not, their goaltender is going to have to steal a couple of games in that play, in the playoffs, and you're going to have a couple of games where you look and you say, how did he do that? But if you're relying on your goaltender to do that every single night, it's just not going to happen. You know, that's just not a model that you can follow and expect to win a Stanley Cup, let alone get past the second round. So, you know, the Canadians really have got a lot of work cut out for them if they want to make this series.
Now, do you think, looking at the Western Conference, you think the Anaheim Ducks are going to lose a game?
I do. You know, it's funny because I actually have the Flames upsetting the Ducks.
Really?
You
know?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
You know what? You look at the Flames offense, and it's, you know, I look at the Ducks offense, and I see a lot of similarities. You know, everyone talks about Getzlaf, Perry, and the other great. But, you know, don't forget, you know, the Flames have Sam Bennett. They have Johnny Goudreau. They have Sean Monahan. They have Yuri Hudler, who had, I think, 74 points this year. They got firepower. You know, this is a team that has weapons. TJ Brody on the blue line. And it's rumored that, you know, I've heard that Mark Giordano may even come back in the series if they can get him back, you know. Oh, boy. So, you know, I think this is a team that really could give Anaheim, you know, a run for their money if they play their game, you know. Certainly game one, I think they were just out of their element. I think they were almost just in wonderment. You know, it just seemed like they were not in that game. And, you know, I would hope that maybe they get a wake-up call. You know, I know Bob Hartley is benching Jonas Hiller in game two. Maybe it's a wake-up call for the younger team. But, you know, as far as offensive firepower, and I really do think that's the Ducks' strength, because I'm not in love with their defense, and I think Freddie Anderson is a good goalie, he's certainly beatable. You know, I think, you know, if you're talking about matching firepower, I think the Flames have it. I really do. So, you know, would I be shocked if the Ducks won the series? Of course not. They're a good team, but, you know, I could see the Flames making a series out of this for sure.
And he's probably one of the only few people that probably knows about 10 players on their roster.
In the United States, anyway.
Exactly. So going back to the Islanders now, again, you know, Brad just mentioned about the fact that Carey Price is up for the Hart Trophy. Obviously, John Tavares is up there along with Alex Ovechkin. So just going back on that conversation with that, do you think that it's Price's to lose?
I do, and I don't see how he loses it, even if the Canadians play him out in the second round, because, you know.
Well, remember, the Hart Trophy is only based on the regular season. Obviously, it's not, shouldn't be
right.
Like, shouldn't the vote? Aren't the votes already tabulated for that?
Yes,
they are. Okay.
Yes.
Thank
goodness. You know, Carey Price. You know, and I think you guys hit the nail right on the head. There is no goaltender's had to do what Carey Price has to do. Devin Dubnyk, you know, with all due respect to him, I think he has a better, you know. And he's done a great job, but, you know, let's be fair, he also does have a bit of a better supporting cast than Carey Price does. And, you know, I think, you know, credit where it's due, Carey Price has done this all year long. And, you know, not to belittle what Devin Dubnyk has done, but he hasn't done it over as long a period of time. So, you know, certainly between two goalies, I would be advantage Carey Price, you know, as far as Vezina goes. But as far as the MVP, you know, it's tough because you can make a case for any one of these guys. But Carey Price, I keep harkening back. You know, you take Tavares off, and yes, the Islanders are in trouble, but, like, they've got offense. You know, you take Carey Price out of the Canadiens, they're done for. You know, they're just absolutely done for. And, you know, you can't quantify what he's done for that team. You know, I think it's one of those years, you know, and I know, you know, generally it doesn't go to a goaltender, but I think this is one of the exception years, I think, so it's right.
And I think the fact that the Canadian media is going to vote for him overwhelmingly is going to help his cause as well, just logistically.
Oh, yeah, it's that East Coast bias also, isn't it?
Well, in hockey, there's a little bit of a Canadian bias.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we'll see. You know what? You know, it's interesting because, you know, not too often we see an MVP on a Canadian team. But, you know, whether it's Canadian bias or ever, you know, certainly can't argue with the pick if it ends up being Carey Price.
Agreed.
All right, so getting to the end of this or getting to the middle, I should say, of round number two. So who do you think will make it to the conference finals on both sides?
Well, I think the Blackhawks are going to make it. I think, you know, as much as I'm pulling for the Flames, you know, I'm going to say that the Ducks are going to make it. You know, and I think those are just two of the teams. I like what Minnesota's done. I just think they're going to be outclassed against Chicago. This is a team I think that's really capable of winning a cup. And, you know, we knew that going in, but, you know, you just get reminded. It's almost like sometimes they go, the Blackhawks go in and they're struggling a little, and then they get to the playoffs and you remember, like, oh, this is why they've won, you know, multiple Stanley Cups in the last few years, because they've got, they're just so deep at every position. You know, even with their goaltending issues, you know, they, which have been sorted out pretty much, they're still, they're just so good. You know, they're just, you know, and even Brad Richards stepping up, he made a couple big plays in game one. They've got depth coming out of everywhere. And, you know, I think that's just a team that, that could come out of the West. And for the Eastern Conference, I'm going to say it's between the Rangers and Tampa Bay. I'm going to say it's the Rangers against the ex-Rangers for the right to go to the Stanley Cup Finals out of the East. I think Tampa's just got so much firepower. I think the Rangers are just the better all-around team, you know, as good as the Capitals are. And I think that's going to be a great matchup, too.
All right. Well, listen, again, to everybody that, that is listening to us, if you want to get any more insight, D. Friedman on NYI. He does work for WFAN, CBS New York, McKean's Hockey, and today's Slap Shot. He's really good. Great insight. Dan, we appreciate the few minutes. Hopefully we'll see you soon. If not, have a great summer, all right?
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Take care.
Hey, Dan.
All right, so that's Dan Friedman, and we're going to take your calls in the second half hour. If you want to reach out to us, the number is 631-888-8811. We will be back shortly after we pay some bills. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on 1240 WGBB.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
And we're back for the second half hour of Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday, May 3rd, 2015. Just want to welcome a new sponsor to my part of the shows, Harbor Beverage, which is located on 204 New York Avenue in Huntington. They've just opened up within the last 8 or 9 months. It's a great beverage place, especially if you're into the micro and nano breweries like I am. Unfortunately, with the weight loss, I can't drink as much as I used to, but I do get a chance to try some great stuff. They got a great selection of beers on tap that you can actually get your growlers filled. They usually have about 10 different choices. Lots of nice stuff. A lot of local beers. Gentleman, my name is Matthew Griffith, is the owner of the store, and he may be calling, and I try to convince him because he's a big Islander fan, and that's how I got involved with him. So hopefully he's listening. Again, if you want to chime in, whether it's Islanders, whether it's Rangers, Derek, if you're listening, you can call in too if you want. But if you want to get in touch with us again, the number is 631-888-8811. We will definitely get to your questions, and we'll talk about whatever. You know, I mean, Brad and I were talking on the ride in, you know, 43 years of memories, 43 years of history, and, you know, he didn't want to really talk about the politics involved, because I think if we decided to, there may be some one of seven words that George Collins says you can't say on the radio or TV that would come out, and Brian would probably kill us. So we're going to try to stay away from that. But, you know, there was a lot of, obviously, you know, as I mentioned on some of my audio blogs on Al's Talk, you know, it was a very hard week, obviously. You know, I've been a season ticket holder since 1988. My wife has been, I think she started like 2 years earlier in 86. She got hers as part of somebody else's divorce deal, which is real cool. But, you know, there's been such unbelievable memories. I mean, I actually mentioned one of mine with Glenn Healy when he was on my show a couple months ago, that, you know, standing next to him at the National Anthem, and I had a Kings Kelly Rudy jersey, and he gave me one of these raspberries. And a week later, I went and bought a Glenn Healy jersey, and he said I was the first one he saw, and he signed it. And I just mentioned to Brad that I had it framed for years, but unfortunately, we're doing some things around the house, and I can't really find a good place to put it anymore. So I actually took it out of the frame, and I haven't put it on since 1991, and it fits. Because I gained so much weight, and I put it back on. I was like, "Wow, I don't feel like I have a beer belly anymore." It's great. But
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, well, I mean, but again, it's the memories of that. You know, it's the memories of following Glenn Healy, and he was one of the nicest people I ever got to talk to. And again, I think a very misunderstood fellow.
Good guy, Heels.
Yeah, he is. He is. I mean, a lot of people don't get some of his humor and some of his antics, but. You know, those were fun. You know, the 93 season, obviously, was probably my best time as an Islander fan. I mean, it was when my wife and I first started dating, and it was such a great thing. And she was sitting on the other side of the arena from me, and we had those triple overtime nights that ended at 12:35 in the morning, and we're waving to each other from one end of the building to the other, and it was, you know, those were fun. Of course, the 2002 run with the Maple Leafs and Bates' penalty shot and Cairns' kicking the you-know-what out of Shane Corson. And, you know, those memories are, you know, are indelible. And I think even some of the other things away from the Coliseum is my years as a fan. You know, I mean, one weekend, I'm going to say Garth was still playing. It was probably around 2002, I think, when we had the Booster Club had 120 people go to Ottawa. We had two busloads and people meeting us there. And all of a sudden, we went to the Islanders Hotel, which was right down a block from where we were staying. And we get into the main foyer with 100 of us screaming, "Let's go, Islanders!" And all of a sudden, Gar Snow comes out of one of the elevators and sees 120 people. And I think he almost did something in his, you know, went to the bathroom. He was like so shocked to see 120 people in orange and blue screaming. And John Weideman, who was the radio voice at the time, said, "Do me a favor." He says, when we score a goal, he says, "I want you to wave your hands back and forth like they're waves of Kansas wheat." He says, because we were all wearing our orange jerseys at the time, because that's when they were out. So, and I think we won the game like 8-2.
Wow.
And, you know, every time all of us were waving. We were supposedly on hockey night in Canada. You know, I don't know what Weideman made us, why he made us do it, but he was, you know, it was probably one of the most fun times I had, you know, going to see the Islanders on the road, you know, and those things, unfortunately, yes, they still could happen. You know, my wife and I will make trips on our own. We'll go to a game or two in Brooklyn here or there. You know, I'll cover a game here or there, you know, as I know you will. But, you know, that's a part of our life that unfortunately now, for the most part, is gone.
Yeah, the Islanders were the only major league professional sports team on Long Island that was unique to Long Island since the Nets left in, what, 1977?
77.
So yeah. You're talking about a very long time. My first Islanders game was actually the last home game of their inaugural season at the Coliseum. 1973 against the Buffalo Sabres and the French Connection line.
Right.
And Jerry Desjardins was in goal for the Islanders, stood on his head. I mean, the shots on goal must have been 2-1, 3-1 in favor of Buffalo, and the Islanders lost only 3-2. But I remember how well Desjardins played, and I remember how great Gilbert Perreault was.
So you saw the 60th loss of the season.
Yes, yes, I did. And but I'll tell you, that was my first NHL game. I was 6 years old and hooked on hockey ever since. I remember going to games in junior high school and in high school where it'd be a Tuesday night and friends of mine, their families had season tickets and they'd say, hey, we got tickets. It's only Winnipeg. It's, you know, but do you want to go?
So what?
Absolutely wanted to go. When the Coliseum was jumping and, you know, those were during the Stanley Cup years and it was just incredible. I remember waiting online for them to release bracelets for the next round of the playoffs between the Rangers and the Islanders. I think it was 1981 or two. I went down there, was waiting, found out I had to wait online overnight to get the tickets. My father said, sure, you can wait online overnight. And my mother said, there is no way you are going. Came back, drove and got me. The next day, I open up Newsday, and the person sitting right next to me was photographed on the pages of Newsday, waiting on, and he got the tickets. So, and I was not able to go to a game of that series. But so many great memories. Even in high school, the banter back and forth between Ranger fans and Islander fans. And back then, in my high school, it was almost all Islander fans. But just, it was for the most part a friendly rivalry. As intense as it got sometimes, these were your friends, these were your neighbors, and you love to give them hell about their team, and they would try to give you heck about your team. But in the end, it just made hockey in New York so much better. And Long Island is going to lose that element,
that identity,
you know, forever. Look, it took Brooklyn how long to get Major League Professional Sports back after the Dodgers left in 1957? 50 years?
Yeah.
Let's hope it doesn't take Long Island that long. And if you think about it, the Islanders really only came to Long Island almost by accident because the WHA was threatening to put a team in the Coliseum, and the NHL said, oh, no, you're not, right. And they beat them to the punch. So it was almost like a perfect storm that created it, and now to have it given away is really the what I'm going to say, is certainly frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk on Facebook, you know, people saying, you know what, you know, you're losing, you're obviously they're leaving for Brooklyn. It's 25 miles away. What's the big deal? You know, it still is a big deal. I mean, you know, for the most intents and purposes, I'm thrilled they're still here. Granted, it's not Kansas City, it's not Quebec, it's not Seattle, it's not any of those other places that they were, you know, that they were rumored to go to and what have you. But obviously, Charles Wong was going to do whatever he could to keep this team in the area where it's supposed to be. And well, you know, it wasn't the right, you know, it wasn't the perfect decision, but at least it was a safe decision. It's not, you know, for the people that live in Suffolk County, like you and myself and others that live a lot further east than we do, it's going to be a tremendous hassle to get if you're going to get a full season ticket to go to Barclays. And I realize that, you know, and mostly it seemed like the younger people on Facebook were the ones that were saying, you know, why aren't you doing it? You know, it's unfortunate. It's logistics, you know, to leave at 4 o'clock. You know, from Uniondale where I work, I happen to work now right across the street from the Coliseum, you know, ironically. But, you know, to leave there at 4 o'clock, to get to Garden City, to get on a train, to get to the game, and obviously I think they're going to – I'm hearing the game's maybe 7:30 this year.
Right.
You know, obviously to get more people from this area of the woods out there. But still, you're not – you know, we used to get home at 10:15. You know, if you were – you know, not when I was working the press box with you, but – you know, when you left the game at 9:45, you were home in 30 minutes. Now you're not getting home until midnight.
Right.
You know, and again, for me, you know, without children, it's okay. It's no big deal. Yeah, you got to get up early and go to work. But, you know, for the kids, that's the hardest thing.
And you add to the fact that you go to the Nassau Coliseum and parking is, what, $12,
$8?
$15. Parking is $15. But if you go with your family, it's still $15. If you put six people in the car, it's still $15.
Right.
You take the Long Island Railroad with your family of four or five,
It's $25 round trip from off-peak from Huntington.
Per person. And you got to hear those three words that no Long Islander ever wants to hear.
Change it, Jamaica.
Change it, Jamaica.
Exactly. And if the Rangers and Islanders play home at the same time, just imagine what that Jamaica train station is going to be like when the Range fans are coming from the Garden and the Islander fans are coming from Barclays and they're meeting together. You know, it is logistics. And again, people are going to moan about it. People are going to say, you know, why aren't you coming? But you know what? The level of desire, the level of being a fan of this team to most of Islander Nation that have been following them for years and years and years isn't going to change.
No.
You know, if they went to Kansas City, believe me, I'd still be supporting those guys. Because those guys represented the crest that they wore on their jerseys, and then thankfully they're still wearing. So nothing of that would ever waver. But it's just the way it is. So again, like I said, if you're listening and you want to talk a little post-mortem, post-requiem about the Islanders, or even talk about any hockey in general, again, it's number 631-888-811. And just double-checking the score, I think they started the second period in Chicago, and I believe there is still no score. So that's, again, as we were talking, I think that's going to be a tremendously tight series, although game two was surprising that Chicago went out with that big, quick 3-0 first period lead, and then all of a sudden Minnesota chipped back. Parisi had one goal. I can't remember who had the other one, but to make it 3-3, and then, of course, Chicago won at the end. I think that if it's going to be Chicago Anaheim in the Western Conference Final, that's going to be a classic.
It is going to be a great series. And you know, you talk about Chicago Minnesota. I think about some of those great matchups in the 80s between the North Stars
and the
Blackhawks, where you had some pretty big brawls galore as part of some very intense series. And you think about the, you know, whether it's Chelios going into the early 90s, or you go your Dino Cicerelli, going back to
Brian Bellows.
And you had some pretty intense players on both sides of that matchup that made for some really Steve Larmer. Just some great hockey on both sides of that. And look, Chicago and the Twin Cities, they don't like each other sports-wise. They just don't.
No. And even St. Louis. And we were actually talking before the show about some possible changes in the works. And what do you got to say for the St. Louis Blues? I mean, three straight first-round exits. I mean, they won the Central Division pretty much, as you said before the show, with basically three second lines and basically no, you know, first line matchup, and two goaltenders who really shouldn't be playing 45, 50 games a year. They're not really, you know, Darren Elliott and I forget the other one. Jake Allen. You know, obviously they had Martin Brodeur in the beginning of the season, you know, in the middle of the season, whatever. And, you know, he did actually fairly well for a guy who didn't play for a good long period of time, but, you know, finally decided to end his career. But, you know, there's big decisions that got to be made in St. Louis, and that's, you know, do they cut ties with Ken Hitchcock? I mean, that's a big question.
I've heard a lot of rumors that they probably will be cutting ties with Hitchcock, but, you know, again, you believe those when you see them. And with the goaltending, it's interesting. You know, they were developing two young goaltenders, both good, highly touted prospects, but when you have two good prospects, you're sort of gambling that one of them steps up and is ready.
Right.
It's like this team was ready to win now, but neither of the goaltenders were ready to win now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not going to work. And as you said, as we were coming over here in the car, they don't have a go-to guy. Tarasenko, as you said, you know, pretty close to becoming that guy, but they don't really have a Tavares or an Ovechkin who is the guy you must stop in order to beat the St. Louis Blues.
Exactly. You know, so again, big decisions there. Obviously, San Jose, we were talking about that earlier, the saga. The saga at San Jose. McClellan gets mutually agreed to leave, which basically saying the word fired without actually saying it. And is, you know, was he necessarily the problem? And I don't really think he was. I think he got the most out of what he could get. But to me, as we talked about, the problem seems to be the guy that's holding the cards up in the up in the skybox, and that's Doug Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, no other team in NHL history that I can remember. And
this
Gary,
is a great stat.
No other team that I can remember has two defrocked captains on their roster, and they have both Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau out there. After blowing that 3-0 playoff lead last year to the LA Kings and blowing Game 7 in the Shark Tank in San Jose, they needed a change of culture. This team had made the playoffs 11 years in a row, and I think they're going to go down as maybe the best team in history since the Emil Francis era New York Rangers to be that good for that long
and
never win a cup.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were unable to move either Marleau or Thornton, if not both of them, and free up a lot of cap room and change the atmosphere in that locker room.
Right, because both of them make well over $7 million a year, I believe.
The cap hits are around the $7 million to $7.5 million mark, and you know, they needed to make some changes. Wilson couldn't because both of them had no-movement clauses, but who is it who gave them the no-movement clauses in the first place? It's Doug Wilson, so it's a mess over there. The crazy thing is, talent-wise, they're still not a bad team, but the West is very competitive. They don't have what it takes to make the playoffs consistently, and you know, I think McClellan took the fall, and if Mike Babcock leaves Detroit, I think McClellan would be a natural to head back to the organization that he came from. He was an assistant there for many years, and he would be a great fit in Detroit. He'd be a great fit for a number of organizations, you know, depending on where jobs open up. But
right, and then again, that brings the next big question, obviously, is Mike Babcock is his run ended in Detroit, and if it is, where does he go from there? I mean, this is a guy that's going to command, obviously, $5 million plus a year as a head coach. We all know he's got a great track record. His record speaks for itself, winning, you know, Olympics and Stanley Cups and World Championships. So, obviously, what do you do? You know, and, of course, Islander boards were all saying, get Babcock, get Babcock, get Babcock. And, of course, you know, obviously the message came out the other day that, you know, Gar Snow said that he's obviously not going to make any changes, that everything is going to remain. And we were talking about that a little bit. And, you know, obviously, you know, the coach doesn't necessarily make every perfect decision every time. And you know, nobody's, you know, Mike Babcock's not perfect. Scotty Bowman, Al Arbor, they were never perfect. You know, there were a lot of times that we, you know, as Islander fans, even during the cup run, you were shaking your head with some of the things Al Arbor did. You know, so no one is out of fault, if you will. But you see it when we go in the locker room. You see it with the guys. You see, you know, and they say something to us, you know, in the locker room about the game. And Cappy says the exact same thing in the press conference. So that means to you, to me, and to most people, and I hope to you too, I'm sure it does, that they're on the same page.
They are. This locker room respects and responds to Jack Capuano. You're right. He may not always make the greatest X's and O's decision, or some of the decisions can be easily second-guessed. But this locker room respects him. They respond to him. They like him. And I just don't see the New York Islanders and Garth Snow changing coaches after the team has their best finish in 30 years, improved by, what was it, 25, 30 points in the standings over last year, and you know, they had their best season since 1984.
Yep.
So it's just not – and plus, look, between you, me, and the lamppost, he's under contract for at least another season, and they don't want to pay him not to coach.
Yeah, exactly. I mean – granted, there are mistakes. I mean, there are issues that need to be fixed. Obviously, we know what happened in the penalty kill this season. It started out miserable. It stayed miserable until about the 60-game mark, where it all of a sudden made a dramatic turn. I mean, yeah, they only improved to 26th in the league, but over that time, they were killing it at like an 87, 88% rate, which is usually a top five, at least. And then the power play, which was ninth all season, all of a sudden took a dip. And, you know, you say, well, how can it take a dip when you got a guy who is such a power play specialist running a power play? Well, you know what? Doug Way can only do just so much. He's, you know, he tells the guys what to do. They're on the ice. They're performing at what they're supposed to do. But he can't go out there and put in a uniform on. Well, maybe he could, but
he wishes he could.
He wishes he still could. I'm sure of that. But, you know, but he can only do just so much. I think maybe, you know, a change in philosophy. One thing I can say right away that I would pray they don't do, and obviously if Ryan Pulock makes the next step and he makes the maturation process and goes up to the NHL, maybe that will go away. But I just don't see that four forward power play option. I just don't. Somebody try to explain to me why it works. To me, I don't know if it does.
It works at times if you have the right look. I remember I'm going back 40 years now, but Bobby Rousseau used to do it for the Rangers in the Emil Francis days.
Yes,
on
okay.
The power play.
You're right.
He was quite effective at
You're
it.
You're right, he was. He would take the draw and sometimes, because he was a natural center, and he would actually drift back.
Yeah. If you have the right guys doing it, it can be effective, but it's a question of having the right guys. And just before we run out of time, you're talking about Jack Capuano, and I think, you know, the improvement of the Islanders does speak for itself in spite of the little question marks here and there. You got to give a lot of credit to Alan Vigneault and the job that he's done at Madison Square Garden, because especially coming off a coach like John Tortorella, he has been sort of the anti-Tortorella in temperament, and this team has responded so well to every move he's made.
Well, you know that I've been a Vancouver fan longer than I've been an Islander fan, and I loved Elaine behind the bench in Vancouver. Obviously, two President's Trophies, a trip to the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. You know he's got a history. And the day he was hired as the head coach of the Rangers, I said, uh-oh, this team is going to do something really good. Because once they all get on board the Vigneault system, and again, he's got his way too, and I think he's in a similar run. You know, his players will go through hell and fire for him. And he's got a great personality, a great calm demeanor. And it works with these guys. You know, it just speaks volumes. And sure enough, it's showing that, you know, they were the best team in the league this past season. And why is it? Because they all subscribe to the system.
Yeah, it works. He's a calming influence, I think, at the right time behind that bench. And like you said, the players are so dedicated to him and his system. And it works. There is a time when the guy's temperament and the guy's system maximizes the talent out there on the ice. And I think you're definitely seeing that last year in the playoffs, this year in the regular season. And even, I think, last year, the last 20, 30 games of the regular season where they adjusted to Vigneault and his system. They got comfortable with it, and their play took off from there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and again, he somehow gets guys that you would just not expect to do things, to step up their game, you know, to unbelievable levels. You know, Dominic Moore is a great example. A great fourth line guy, a great citizen, you know, obviously went through an incredible tough time with losing his wife. And he turns out to be a savior sometimes for that team. You know, and when guys like Nash and Zuccarello and Martin St. Louis aren't performing, all of a sudden you get that contribution. He comes out of nowhere. And, you know, Jesper Foss comes out of nowhere and does these things. You know, and that's the type of coach he was in Vancouver. You know, he'd get those fourth line guys, the Tanner Glasses of the world, you know, the Chris Tanners, the guys you just wouldn't expect. All of a sudden, they're making the contribution, and not the Sedins or not Ryan Kessler or Luongo in net. You know, it just would be somebody different. And that's the sign of a coach that anybody would want to play for.
Look at a guy like Klein having almost a career year on the blue line before he got hurt for the Rangers this year. He just, guys who you don't expect, stepping up at the right time and getting the job done. And now, do you go back with the Canucks as far as like Dennis Vervegaard? I mean, you're...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Orlan Kurtenbach.
There you go.
Stan Smeal. Oh, yeah, I go back.
Andre Boudrias.
I go back, yep. Gary Edwards.
There you go.
Yep, I go back. But the one thing I did want to, you know, we mentioned it earlier and we talked about Barry Trotz, but I like the things that obviously he said after Game 7 about the Islanders, not only just about the team itself, but about the building. And I'll leave it at that in the last couple of minutes we got on the show, that those comments that he made, and he basically said how it was fantastic, you know, the old building and the fans responding and stuff like that, you know. Obviously, you all have the "you can't, you know, hear us" and, you know, you can, you know, the bit with Ovechkin and stuff. But, you know, that's one thing I noticed. And again, I know you've been to a bunch of arenas. I've been to 24. And I can honestly say, because of the way that building was constructed, there is no louder building anywhere. I mean, you go to the Bell Center in Montreal, 21,273 people every single game. And it is loud, but there's nothing there's nothing like when that old lady in that old barn on Hempstead Turnpike starts kicking.
I think it's sort of a universal thing as far as these new stadiums, new arenas versus the older arenas. And look, the new stadiums are beautiful. They have all the amenities, more room, better better food and clean bathrooms.
Right.
And you know, I think about Citi Field. The kids can play, you know, wiffle ball out in the outfield. There's
right.
a million things to do. But, you know, is the atmosphere the same for the game in these new arenas? And very often the answer is no. Look at the new Yankee Stadium compared to the old Yankee Stadium. Citi Field compared to Shea Stadium. Nicer? Yes. But more, you know, louder or more intimate for the actual sport itself? There's something missing there.
Yeah. I mean, the only good thing about Citi Field when we talk about it, and unfortunately 2-1-0 losses for the last two games for the Mets, but you are kind of on top of the, you know, when you're sitting in the top section, you are on top of the field almost more than you were in other places. So that's the one good thing about it. But you're right. You know, you go to, you know, like I said, I've been to the American Airlines Center in Dallas, which is a tremendous building. But you know what? Even when they claim to be loud, it's you can hear a pin drop. You know, it's not the same. You know, the Canadian barns are somewhat different in a sense. You get that feeling no matter what, but. You know, I'm gonna miss the old lady. You know, I mean, it will be different looking at the scoreboard over a blue line. You know, obviously sitting behind a net, you're gonna have trouble without seeing some seats. But you know, it is what it is, and they're still here, and that's the only thing you could be happy about.
Yeah, and look, bottom line, there is progress in this world, and you lose some things that are good, and you gain some things that are good, but. I think the bottom line for our generation of Islander fans is part of our childhood is now gone. And it's something that, I mean, like, I got to take my kids to the Coliseum a few times, but, you know, they won't be able to share that with their kids.
No, unfortunately
and,
not.
Part of our childhood is gone.
Well, listen, Brad, I appreciate you coming in on short notice for me. You know, like I said, I didn't know I was going to be hosting a show until last night, so... It worked out pretty well. To those missing Mr. John, the silky, dulcet tones of John Panarese, he'll be back with me 2 weeks from tonight, where we'll be talking about round three of the playoffs. We're hopefully going to get somebody from either the Mets or the Ducks to come in and talk baseball for a change, since we got to change some things. But again, Brad, as always, it was an absolute pleasure having you come on. Folks, you're listening, I'm glad you did. And for any questions or concerns, you can tweet me, GHardingWGBB. And Seals hockey, if you want to talk to Brad, especially if you go show him pictures of his Seals jerseys, maybe. But listen, thanks for coming and listening to Sports Talk 1240 tonight. This is Gary Harding and Brad Kirchberg on WGBB. Have a wonderful Sunday, everybody.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.